I'm your host, Brian Wells, and I'm a fourth-generation homesteader. Since 2008, my family and I have been homesteading here in beautiful upstate New York. In 2019, I launched the Homestead Journey podcast to help people just like you get started and find success on their journey towards self-sufficiency, self-reliance, and sustainability. This is the Homestead Journey, and this is Season 4. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome. Welcome to another episode of the Homestead Journey podcast. Glad to be back with you again this week after missing a week, but we are back. Yes, this is Season 4, and this is episode number 164 of the Homestead Journey podcast. And so I hope things are well with you wherever you might be. It certainly has been a very, very busy last couple of weeks here on the homestead as we are getting ready for Brian J to head off to college. And obviously the garden doesn't wait for anyone. So I've been very, very busy trying to get the garden in. And so that is a big reason why we did not have an episode last week. So thank you very much for your patience with me. As I said at the beginning of this season, one of the things that I was trying to do is have a little bit more grace with myself, and that if an episode didn't get recorded, well, an episode didn't get recorded. And it's not that I'm taking you for granted or that I'm taking this podcast for granted, but I really am trying to keep the first things first here. And especially with Brian J getting ready to head off to college, I certainly am wanting to maximize every moment with him. And so thank you very much for your patience, for your understanding. So let me bring you up to speed with what we've been doing here on 3B Farm and Homestead. So again, very, very busy last couple of weeks here on the homestead with just so much food preservation that we have been doing. The garden is coming on fast and furious. And in fact, I honestly am not really doing it justice by keeping on top of everything that I should, but I'm doing the best I can with the time that I have allotted. And last week in particular, I really got into canning mode in a very, very big way. In fact, last Thursday, I found myself on one of those nights where it was 2 o'clock in the morning, I think it was, when I was turning off the canner, and then I went to work, and then that next night I did some more canning. And so I had several rounds of late nights of turning canners off. And really what I have come to understand is that I am not as young as I used to be, and I don't recover quite as well as I used to from those very, very late nights of canning. And then on top of that, we had a few other personal reasons why I wasn't getting to bed in a timely fashion that just really wreaked havoc with my system. And I found myself on Sunday night just absolutely spent. And Sunday evenings is when I normally record this podcast. And I laid down on the couch and I was out. I was fast asleep. And so again, thank you very much for your patience and your understanding. But like I said, a lot of food preservation over the last couple of weeks. We started out pressure canning beans, did several rounds of jams and jellies. So I've done a couple of batches of strawberry jam. We've done some pepper jam, blueberry jam, currant jelly, mint jelly. I've done some pickled beets, dilly beans, and then, like I said, pressure canned beans and beets. And then last Sunday, my mom and dad came over and we actually froze up this year's supply of corn. So we cut back a little bit this year with Brian J headed off to college. And then also we had some left over this year. We only did 100 ears, splitting them evenly between my mom and dad and Bonnie and I. And so that is now in the freezer. Now, as I've shared with you in the past, we don't grow our own sweet corn here on the homestead, namely just because of a lack of space. It's not something that I would want to put in my raised beds just because of the amount of space that it takes up. versus the amount of yield that you get. And there is a local family that actually they have a little bit of a thing that they've got going on where they're growing sweet corn to support their son's eventual journey to college. And so if I can support that family and save some room in my garden, definitely happy to do so. Now, this year's corn wasn't the greatest, and I'm certainly not throwing shade at them. Part of it just has to do with the season. And they had an infestation this year of some corn borers. Now, they made it up to us by including additional ears. So it's not like they shorted us by any stretch of the imagination. But it just meant that it was a little bit more to work around, so to speak. But certainly having that corn in the freezer, there's just nothing like it. If you've ever had home-preserved corn, you just don't want to go back to the store stuff. You just don't. It is so delicious, and I'm so glad we have that in the freezer. Now, I did have some issues this year with my pressure canning, and I'm not quite sure what I've been doing wrong. In the past, when I would do my headspace, and if you can at all, headspace is the amount of space from the top of the jar to the top of the food that you have in your jars, I've always just kind of eyeballed it. I know what the measurements in general are for the different ring spacings on your jars, so I've kind of always just eyeballed it. This year, I have a little device that has jagged teeth on it that's supposed to give you a more accurate measurement. And so I've really paid attention to trying to have the correct headspace in my jars. And I don't know if it was that or if I really borked something, but I certainly have had more problems this year with regards to siphoning than I have in the past. And one of the things that I do every year for the fair is I'll do a jar of what I call fancy beans. And what I do is I will take time to alternate green and yellow beans all the way around the edge of the jar. So you kind of have this very nice stripe pattern. Now, trust me, folks, I don't do that on every can of beans that we do. We snap them, generally speaking, into 2-3 inch long pieces and we can them up. But just to give me that edge over my mom when it comes to the fair, I like having that jar of fancy beans. And this year, I had to do that jar of fancy beans 4 times to get the headspace the way that I wanted it, just because I was having issues with siphoning. When it came time to do my beets this year, I actually lost 3 jars of my beets because the siphoning was so bad. I just didn't feel comfortable putting them on the shelf. And even with the beets that I am going to go ahead and store, we'll need to use them up relatively quickly because in some of them, I had 50% of the liquid siphoned out. So definitely not a good run. Not sure if I had too many beets in there. I'm just not 100% sure what I did wrong. Now, when I got my correct headspace with lack of siphoning this last time around, I did 2 things different. And that's always bad if you're trying to test out your theories. But I did 2 things that were different. Number one, I didn't pack the beans quite as much as I had done in the past. So in the past, I'd really tried to pack them in really tight, left a little looser this time. And then this time when I went to cool the canner down, I really took some time to allow the canner to cool down more gradually. Certainly when you're doing a pressure canner, you're going to always let the pressure dissipate, but I just let the pressure dissipate. And then I removed the lid and pulled jars, which is, I think, what I've always done. But this time what I did is I let the pressure dissipate. I let it sit for about 5 minutes covered. Then I pulled the lid, let it sit for about 5 minutes. Then I pulled the jars, which has not usually been my pattern. But it seemed to have worked. But again, I'm not sure if it was less packed jars or if it was the slower cooling. But whatever it was, it seemed to have worked. And so I'm glad to have my jar of fancy beans for the fair. So this year I did plant a couple of new varieties of beans to me. I planted some pole bean varieties and they have been very, very prolific. Already I've canned up 42 pints of beans and we already had some beans left over from last year. So I really didn't want to can any more beans. It would just be way too many beans for just Bonnie and I. This week I discovered something called leather breeches, which is a dried bean. And in essence, what you do is you take your beans and you string them on a string and you let them dry out. You can actually also do them in a dehydrator, but the old school method was to string them and let them hang and dry out naturally. And so today I went ahead and spent some time stringing beans. And we're going to go ahead and let them dry and try this whole concept of leather breeches. So if you head on over to our Facebook page or our Instagram page, you will see pictures there. I'll post them after I get done recording this episode, and you'll be able to see kind of what this process looks like. And I'll also include some links on the Facebook page to some instructions if it's something that you're interested in giving a try. But I'm excited about it. It's definitely a new method of food preservation. Even though we've done the dehydration thing in the past, I've never done it quite like this. So excited to see whether or not we like it. And then I'm excited to see whether or not it works. And then I'm also excited to see whether or not we're going to enjoy eating beans preserved in this method. Now, today marks 2 weeks pig-free here on the homestead, and it honestly has not been as much of an adjustment as I thought it was going to be. I really, really thought that emotionally I was going to miss those pigs a lot. Frankly, I haven't. Now, maybe in part it was that it was such a difficult load that I'm just glad they're gone, and maybe it was just that it had run its course with us, and so in that essence, I'm glad they're gone. And maybe it's just the fact that I know that they've gone to a good home with my cousin, and I'm excited to see his journey there. But whatever it is, certainly my heart has not been broken not to have pigs here on the homestead. And I really, really thought that it would be more of an emotional thing for me than it has been. Having said that, Bonnie and I have kind of rejiggered some things here and reallocated chores. So I've taken over the care of our laying flock. She's still caring for the geese and our young pullets. But I am now in charge of making sure that the layers are fed and watered and the eggs collected, something that she has been doing for the last couple of years. And I've really, really been enjoying that. I really haven't done much with the chickens over the last several years other than cleanup duty, cleaning out the coop, putting in shavings inside and some wood chips in the run, and then also the task of sending them to freezer camp when that's been warranted. And so certainly it's been a lot of fun. It's been an enjoyment for me to kind of get back to basics and spend some time in the chicken coop with the chickens, really, really enjoying that. One other thing that we had happen over the last couple of weeks is we have had a new addition to the homestead. And that is we had a kitten just show up out of nowhere. We had seen it eating the food on the front porch, and I would open up the door periodically and it would run off. And then about a week and a half ago, we heard it in our basement. It had gotten in the garage and then somehow in our basement. And so we were able to trap it using a little live trap and had put it in a cage to kind of figure out what was going on. And then it escaped again into the garage and we couldn't find it for several days. And then it kind of got quiet. It had been meowing back at us. And then all of a sudden it kind of got quiet. And then this week I was able to actually catch it again in the live trap. And the funny thing is, folks, is this is the most friendly feral cat that I have ever met. So we've asked around with neighbors and whatnot to find out if maybe it was their cat. Nobody has claimed ownership of it. And so right now we have a new cat here on the homestead. It's a black cat. Very cute. My son and his girlfriend have been babying it. It got a little bath yesterday. They clipped its nails. They've been carrying it around. And who knows? We may have a new cat to replace Sunny who disappeared a couple of months ago. So we'll see how all of that works out. But for whatever reason, I'm not quite sure. I don't remember the entire backstory, but Brian J. And his girlfriend have named the cat Steak. Now, usually we'd name animals like that if we're going to eat them. As far as I know, we have no plans to eat steak, at least not that steak, here on the homestead. One last thing to share with you. As I mentioned, the garden is in full swing. Not everything is getting put in the freezer. Not everything's getting put in jars. Some of that stuff is going straight to our belly. Been enjoying a lot of things from the garden. Things like beets and turnips and beans and peas and cauliflower. And I've got some cabbage that is ready to go. Tomatoes are starting to come on. I've had my first few sun gold tomatoes. So all of that is very exciting. The garden not producing as well as it has in years past. I certainly have not kept up on the garden as well as I have in years past. It's a little weedy in places, but it's still producing. And so for that, I am very, very thankful. And we will continue to enjoy that bounty as long as the summer holds and the frost stays away. Hard to believe, but in about a month, we'll be looking at the calendar wondering, is the first frost in sight? Well, that's what we've been up to here on 3B Farm and Homestead. I know the segment's gone a little bit long today, but it's been a couple of weeks since I've brought you up to speed. So you are now up to date with what we've been doing here on 3B Farm and Homestead. Before we head on over to this week's Charting the Course, I did want to remind you that the fall gathering of Homesteaders of New England is quickly approaching. It's going to be taking place September 9th and 10th in Greenfield, New Hampshire. And just a great lineup of speakers. Morgan Gold from Goldshaw Farm, Alumna from Lumna Acres, Troy McClung from the Pastured Pig Podcast and Little Red Toolhouse YouTube channel. Ginger from Murray McMurray is going to be talking about chickens. Rich Giordano, who you know, I'm a huge fan of his. He's going to be there. I'm going to be there. Bonnie's going to be there. Of course, Jack Polner, my buddy from the Mindful Homestead, he's the one that puts this on. He's going to be there. Just so many wonderful, wonderful individuals are going to be there. It's going to be a wonderful weekend of learning, of presentations, but most importantly, of community. So if you live in the Great Northeast, New England, or the surrounding territories, certainly check out this wonderful event. Tickets are available and you can find out more information and the up-to-date speakers list over at newenglandhomesteaders.com. So head on over to newenglandhomesteaders.com to buy your tickets today. Don't miss out on this event. All right, folks, let's jump on over to this week's Charting the Course. On today's Charting the Course, we are going to take a little bit of a deep dive into the topic of steam canning. Now, this is a relatively new method of food preservation for us here on 3B Farm and Homestead. In fact, my steam canner arrived a little over a week ago, and I've been putting it through its paces since it got here. But it's certainly not a new method of food preservation. In fact, it's been around since the early 1900s. But there was a little bit of controversy about it, and eventually it kind of fell out of favor. A lot of the extension agencies actually actively discouraged people from using the method because of a lack of in-depth testing to ensure that it was, in fact, a safe, reliable method of food preservation. In the 1980s and then in the early 2000s, there were some attempts to do some testing, but there was some controversy with regards to test methodology. And so, again, it continued to be discouraged by the powers that be, the USDA and the extension agencies across the United States of America. In 2011, the University of Wisconsin and the University of Georgia were given a grant to do some in-depth studies and to hopefully publish a paper for the USDA on the topic of steam canning. And they, in fact, did find that it was a safe and effective method, and they published their findings in, I believe it was June of 2015. Now, in January of 2015, the State University of Utah also published their findings, again, saying that steam canning was a safe and effective method of canning high-acid foods. They found that you can use steam canning interchangeably with water bath canning using the same recipes and times with a few caveats. First, any recipes that require more than 45 minutes of processing should not be done in a steam canner because the steam canner could run out of water. And then the second caveat is that there were two styles of steam canners that they tested and approved. The first is a dome style canner made out of aluminum, and it kind of looks a bit like one of those metal cake pans that your grandmother might have used back in the day to take a cake to a church picnic. It's a dome style with a shallow base, maybe 2 to 3 inches high, and then the top of the canner sits on it. Now, the other style is a stainless steel multi-use canner that is made by VKP. I think Victorio Kitchen Products is what the VKP stands for, but it's the Harvest stainless steel multi-use canner. That's actually the one that I purchased, and I actually purchased it because it is a multi-use canner. It can actually function as both a steam canner and a hot water bath canner, and then also as a stock pot. If I can have a product that does multiple things and it does them all very well, I would rather go that route. And so that in part is the reason why I decided to get the multi-use canner, because I figured if I didn't like steam canning, I would have a hot water bath canner. My Graniteware canner is a little bit long in the tooth. I bought it used at an auction probably 12 years ago, and certainly it was showing its age, so I really did need an upgrade there. And so I figured if the steam canning thing doesn't work out well, I can at least use it as a water bath, and then having a nice large 20-quart stock pot sounded good to me. So the first weekend that I had it, I actually put it through its paces. I went ahead and made a batch of strawberry jam, and I water bath canned it. Then I turned around and I made a batch of strawberry jam and I steam canned it. And that same weekend is when we did up our beets. And so I used that stock pot to cook up the beets so that we could skin them and then pressure can them. And it worked very, very well in all three phases. But before I kind of give my full thoughts with regards to that canner, let's talk about some of the pros and cons of steam canning. The pros of a steam canner is that it uses less water. It uses about 3.5 quarts of water, both styles, whether you use the dome style or the stock pot style, I'll call it, which is much, much less than a traditional hot water bath canner, which means that it's going to be obviously less water, less energy needed to heat it, less time to heat that water, less weight for you to carry around. If you have a glass top stove, it's going to be less weight on the glass top stove. So a lot of benefits in those areas. But another thing that I found with it is that we have super hard water here. And a lot of times when I get done hot water bathing something, I have this white film that builds up. When I steam canned, I didn't have that at all. My jars came out of the canner pristine. And I really, really, really like that. Another thing that I really liked about the style of canner that I got is that it has a temperature gauge built into the handle. Now, this only applies to the VKP products. VKP actually makes a dome style canner and they make the stock pot style canner, but there is another brand of dome style canner that's called Back to Basics. And as I understand it, it does not have the temperature gauge in the handle. Instead, the way you judge when to start the time is the size of the steam trail that is coming out of the canner itself. And so having that temperature gauge in the handle really, really made it nice because it took the guesswork out of when I should start timing it. Another thing that I really, really liked about this canner is that it has a coating on the handles. So I can move this pot around while it is still hot without needing any kind of oven mitts or anything like that because the handles are coated. Now, what are the cons of steam canning? Well, it requires another piece of equipment, another piece of specialized equipment where you can actually water bath in a regular stock pot. If you have a trivet in the bottom of it to raise the jars up off the bottom of the pan, this requires another specialized piece of equipment. Steam canning shouldn't be done in anything other than a certified steam canner. So you shouldn't use a pressure canner as a steam canner. You should just be using either the dome style or the stock pot style canners. Another thing that I have found with regards to a bit of a downside to the steam canning is that due to the nature of what it does, you're getting a little bit of humidity into the air in your kitchen. I think a little bit more than you would with a water bath canner. And then also you just need to have a little bit of patience and care when you take the lid off of the canner. Otherwise, you get a lot of that condensation off of the lid all over your floor. Ask me how I know. They are also quite a bit more pricey than a graniteware style hot water bath canner, what many people think of as the traditional hot water bath canners. A graniteware hot water bath canner can be found at Walmart for about $25. The dome style canner is going to set you back about $60. And the multi-use canner is going to set you back about $85. So we are talking a little bit more of a spend on your canner than you would if you went with a graniteware traditional hot water bath canner. Another downside to it is that it is a one-trick pony if you buy the dome style steam canner. Now, if you buy the stock pot style, it's definitely got multiple uses. But if you're buying the dome style steam canner, again, it's just one more gadget to kind of have kicking around the house. And again, it's just a kind of a one-trick pony. Another downside to steam canners is if you get the dome style steam canners, both the Back to Basics and the VKP models, as I understand it, are made out of aluminum. And so if you have a glass-topped induction range, those aren't going to work for you. You would need to buy one of the stainless steel stockpot style steam canners. Also going with the Back to Basics model, not having the temperature gauge in it, leaves a little bit of guesswork with regards to judging when to start your time. And so I would certainly recommend that if you're going to go the dome route, to go with the VKP model because it does have the built-in gauge in the handle. And I certainly think that's well worth it. Now, having said that, I really don't recommend the dome style at all. In all fairness, I have not tested the dome style. I've only used the stock pot style. But for me, the additional $25 that you're going to pay for the stock pot style is well worth it because you now have a multi-use tool. If you water bath can things that take more than 45 minutes, you're going to need a water bath canner anyhow. And so if you're going to buy a $25 graniteware water bath canner, why not just spend the additional $25 and get the stock pot style? But then the other piece to it as well is having a 20-quart stock pot for an additional $25 is a great bargain, in my opinion. Look around and see if you can find a 20-quart stainless steel stock pot for $25. You're going to struggle to find that, if you can even find it at all. And so, in my opinion, if you're going to look into getting a steam canner, it makes a lot more sense to go the stock pot style route over the domed canner. So, would I recommend steam canning? If you're brand new to canning and your budget is tight, then in my opinion, going the granite wear style hot water bath canner is probably the right way to go. Would I recommend that somebody who's brand new to canning drop $85 on the canner versus $25 on a granite wear? Probably not. Unless you're somebody who water consumption, energy consumption, or the weight of a canner is of importance to you. Then certainly I think that looking into the stockpot style steam canner makes a lot of sense. Also, if you're somebody who has hard water like I do, not having to clean off the jars every time, I think is a huge time saver. And then put on top of that the fact that it is a much quicker cycle time for the steam canner versus a hot water bath canner, and you might want to look into it. So I guess my recommendation is simply this. It depends on your situation. If you're brand new to canning, then maybe you want to start out with a granite ware, a hot water bath canner, and look to upgrade in a few years. But if any of the other things that I mentioned are of importance to you, or you're somebody who's been canning for a while and maybe your granite ware hot water bath canner is kind of a little long in the tooth, it's showing its age, and you're looking to upgrade, then I would highly, highly, highly recommend that you take a look at the Harvest multi-use steam canner. I've really, really been enjoying it. And quite frankly, I doubt I will ever go back to water bath canning unless I absolutely have to because of longer processing times. I really have enjoyed using the steam canner as a steam canner. I will have links to both models, the dome style as well as the hot water bath style, in the show notes. So if you are interested in taking a look at those, definitely look that up. They will be affiliate links. And if you buy through those links, it certainly is going to help the show out, and I would greatly appreciate that. Well, folks, that's it for this episode of the Homestead Journey podcast. I hope you found it helpful. If you're somebody who's been steam canning for a while, I'd love to hear from you. Brian@thehomesteadjourney.net is my email address. If you're somebody who tried steam canning and didn't like it, I'd also love to hear from you. Reach out to me as well, or you can also reach out on all of the socials. The links are in the show notes below. If you have any other questions with regards to canning or about steam canning, reach out to me. I'll be happy to try to answer them to the best of my ability. And until next time, everybody, keep up the good work.